This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Cray and Intel. The new Cray XE30 supercomputer, powered by Intel Xeon processors, delivers scalable performance for the most demanding computing challenges. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownXE30.
This is HPC Wire Soundbite, your weekly source of commentary and insight on the HPC stories shaping the industry.
Nobel gives nod to HPC.
And Spectra goes deep with storage.
Hello and welcome to HPC Wire Soundbite for October 11th, 2013, available Fridays on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Addison Snell with Intersect 360 Research, joined again by my co-analyst, Michael Feldman, also Intersect 360 Research. Michael, thanks for joining us again.
Hey, great to be here.
Hey, we finally got some good news to celebrate here in the HPC market. Somebody's paying attention to us.
Yeah, there was some good news, especially after last week's sort of downer news about the shutdown. Some of the Nobel Prizes were announced this week, and a couple of them actually had some nice HPC connections.
We're getting international acclaim, Michael, especially in the field of chemistry.
Yeah, chemistry, we had three professors that work in the U.S., Martin Karplis at Harvard, Michael Levitt at Stanford, and Ariel Wachelle at University of Southern California. They shared the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for the work they did in computational chemistry that they've developed over the past few decades, starting back in the 1970s.
Right. This wasn't for a specific feat like mapping the genome or anything, but rather a recognition of computational chemistry in general and how it's merged with physical testing in order to really redefine the field of biological chemistry.
Right. They did some of the foundational work in computational chemistry back when it was just starting up, and the specific thing they did was basically they melded some classical laws of physics and quantum physics into these models to get a more accurate model of how these molecules behave in real life, and they developed that over the past few decades, and now Nobel has chosen to recognize that, and these models are being used now, of course, in a lot of different places, a lot of different projects, and these were three of the people that developed the original paradigm for this.
Right. Michael Levitt in particular, who's local to us at Stanford, had previous experience with high-performance computing going back to the 1960s, including at Lawrence Berkeley National Labs, but some of the real foundational work in computational chemistry taking place at the Weizmann Institute in Israel, where they were developing some of the first quantum physics models in 1976 to simulate electron activity at the molecular level.
Right, and it's the quantum physics part, I guess, that is the most computationally challenging part of this. And to add that on, I mean, this was before, back in the 70s, they didn't have a lot of the power to do this, but they had the models, and since then, sort of the hardware's caught up, and these models are being used to much greater effect now. But, yeah, I mean, these are very important models that are being used, I guess, not just in chemistry and inorganic chemistry, but especially the life sciences now to do things like drug discovery, things that are of practical use now that are just more recent but have become very important to different industries.
Yeah, exactly right. Computational chemistry, a big part of the HPC market because of its role in academic research, in federal research, and then, of course, as you were just alluding to, on the commercial side with pharmaceutical companies, bioengineering labs. Now you've got the emerging fields in genomics. Chemistry is a big part of all of this.
And the other one, so sort of closing the book on that, the other connection here now is they gave the Nobel Prize in Physics to Higgs, actually the man named Higgs, Peter Higgs.
Peter Higgs.
And François Englert, who co-developed the theory of the Higgs boson back several decades ago. But now, since the Large Hadron Collider has basically proven the existence of this through that particle accelerator and the computational work that was done in connection with it, they've decided this is the time to give it to Higgs, since sure enough there is the Higgs boson there, and so they awarded that this year to him.
There it is. We found it. I got a prescription bottle full of them right here, my personal collection of of Higgs bosons. But to the point, this is another good example of the merging of the physical and the modeling and simulation. The Large Hadron Collider, of course, is a physical collider. They're doing physical experiments in order to collect evidence of the Higgs particle, but there's a lot of data reduction and high-performance computing getting conducted over the Open Science Grid as part of that analysis.
Right. CERN has basically built this large Open Science Grid to do the data reduction, the analysis of the data that's coming in from the collider, and that was instrumental. Without that, it would just be a stream of data, and nobody would know what to do with the petabytes of bits. So they've done that, and this is done at multiple sites. It's not just all being done at the collider site in Switzerland. A lot of American and European sites are helping with the reduction and the analysis. But there's a lot of computation and high-end storage behind this, and it made it all possible, and it made it possible to discover the Higgs boson this past year.
So both of these great achievements, both of them directly recognizing the role of high-performance computing in scientific advancement, and with a certain amount of irony, because we're still coping with the ongoing federal shutdown in the United States, which is shutting down things like NIH funding, which directly funded the work that the Nobel Prize is recognizing with regards to computational chemistry. This was all going on an NIH grant.
Right. I think people pointed out the irony of that, right? The NIH had supported a lot of that funding, and now, the NIH is for all intents and purposes, shut down. And so it points to the fact, without agencies like this, without research like this, there will be no Nobel Prizes, at least for the U.S. in things like this, because that work will have to be done other places. So
prizes notwithstanding, you have to ask yourself, is research in computational chemistry something that we would like to have funded at the federal level? Now, you can get into a political debate about the levels of national spending, but I think here at least is one tangible example of something beneficial coming out of a research grant and ultimately including high-performance computing.
Yeah, and ultimately we certainly expect the NIH and all these other agencies to be funded again. But as we pointed out last week, since the sequester took effect to reduce funds for all the R&D agencies, it's still at a much lower level than it was when these three scientists started out and got this funding to do the computational chemistry work. So, starting up the government's not going to fix all this. It's just going to put it back to sort of the sorry state it was before it all happened. So.
Right. Now, Leavitt is quoted in the San Jose Mercury News as saying that he's now working to procure a large cluster computer with thousands of processors, and that the university, Stanford University, plans to dedicate a building that'll be the computer lab for those clusters. But again, that comes back to NIH grants and the potential hit that the federal government shutdown has on the market. We even saw another story reported in HPC Wire where SGI is now warning a grim outlook for their new fiscal year based on the slowdown in federal spending.
Yeah, I think it obviously they took a hit, and other companies at this point aren't saying anything, but we can assume that other companies that are in the federal business and HPC are likewise taking somewhat of a hit right now.
Right. We mentioned last week the federal government is directly responsible for 10% of the HPC market in terms of spending, the U.S. federal government. But then, of course, there's the echo effect onto the university space, because those NIH or NSF grants go to funding a lot of research through indirect spending.
Right. They tend to be joint grants with the universities. So, yeah, it does spread out that way.
It spreads out that way, and then presumably has if it's a prolonged shutdown, also an effect on commercial markets, because you certainly get an effect into industry as well if the whole federal government is limping along.
Yes, and presumably all this money will come back, but it'll all be delayed. So people that were counting on filling out quotas for the quarter aren't going to happen. So that money will go into the next quarter, hopefully, or the following quarter. But yeah. Everybody has to meet payroll and get the money for this year, and then this stuff is just going to be pushed now into next month or next quarter now.
We'll keep our weekly federal watch on as we look at developments in the U.S. federal government shutdown. Let's take a quick break, then we'll come back and talk about some new product announcements from Spectra.
Need scalability across the performance spectrum? The Cray XC30 supercomputer family delivers on Cray's commitment to an adaptive supercomputing architecture that provides both extreme scalability and sustained performance. Leveraging a robust processor roadmap, high-performance interconnect, and flexible network topology, users can configure the exact machine to meet their specific requirements today and also remain confident that they can upgrade and enhance their system to address the most challenging multi-petaflop application demands of the future. To learn more about Intel Xeon processor-enabled Cray supercomputers, visit www.cray.com/ownXC30.
Okay, we're back here, and like you said, Addison, we wanted to talk a little bit about Spectralogic. They had a couple of big announcements this week. You went to an event where they unveiled those. Why don't you tell us exactly what they talked about this week?
Yeah, Michael, I was in Colorado for an event they were calling their Spectra Summit. People were tweeting along on hashtag Spectra Summit as the announcements came out, but they had a press and analyst event in Broomfield, Colorado, near the company's headquarters in Boulder that included some tours and some product demonstrations there. But Spectra had a brace of announcements that were separated by 2 days. The first was really more of an open standard announcement under the heading of deep storage. They announced under this vision for what deep storage represents, they announced some new standards or protocols and interface they were calling DS3, which is an extension of the Amazon S3 storage interface or protocol, building in a REST interface and the ability to do distributed media over an S3 interface. Now, these are things that are a little beyond what we've normally talked about on the HPC side because they're enterprise standards. S3 is something we haven't really talked about before, but this is an Amazon web services interface. S3 stands for Simple Storage Service. And it basically allows for the use of storage over the cloud. And Spectra is extending this to DS3 for Deep Simple Storage Service, which uses the same types of commands but extends them to be able to do that over distributed media devices. So it could span multiple tapes for larger amounts of what they're calling deep storage here. It also builds in REST protocols. REST is very commonly known in the enterprise space, but stands for representational state transfer. And basically what you're doing here is in cloud or HTTP or web types of environments, you're reducing your client services, your client server interface to a more standard set of verbs to be able to do these get and puts over HTTP or web services interfaces, and you refer to devices having a REST or a RESTful, to make it an adjective, interface. Now, Spectra is bringing this to their tape libraries or their deep storage infrastructure by defining 6 attributes of deep storage: that it has a REST interface, that it's persistent, cost-effective, efficient, secure, and easy to deploy. So that was the first of their 2 announcements. Are you holding with me so far? This is kind of a mouthful here.
Yeah, that's a lot. Well, it's interesting to see that, right, because you always think, and I guess Spectra has to fight this all the time, the tapes are sort of this add-on thing you stick at the end of a system, and then you're sort of responsible for, you know, gluing your software to it. And here it looks like they're making a big push to put these into open standards, these different open standard type platforms, and make them, you know, a part of sort of the family of what's already accepted in the web and enterprise communities, and get the storage so that people can buy tapes and not have to worry about, you know, basically doing their own integration and putting the tier on themselves. So it does seem like an important announcement if they can make this work and get these, you know, this sort of tape storage into some of these bigger systems that maybe didn't think of using it or rely on disk to do some of these and now have run out of space to do it cost effectively.
Right. The idea is to bring this deep storage concept to more types of organizations where you drive a very low power, very low cost per gigabyte storage interface with a defined set of protocols, and it made a lot more sense in context when they got to their second announcement, which was their actual product, Black Pearl. Black Pearl is a data management appliance that embodies a lot of these deep storage types of the REST interface. It's an appliance with SSD caching in order to move things from an online environment off to deep storage. And I think they separated these announcements because they wanted to establish the standard as one thing and not something that they own. But then announce their product that's based on that standard as being something separate. And I think this is notable because they can bring this to a lot of their home markets, most of which are really HPC markets. They're things like life sciences and oil and gas and federal and academic research and even things like internet services that get done at ultra-scale levels. But then extend it to more enterprise areas like private cloud and big data that should attract new customers or the ability for them to get new customers onto this same kind of deep storage strategy using Black Pearl as a go-between or a stepping stone.
Okay, so the idea when announcing the open platforms is other vendors presumably could sign on to those as an open standard user, so somebody else could write a DS3 client for their stuff and for their platform, their hardware, and do the same thing. Basically, Spectre's saying it's okay to use these things. We're going to use it. We've got this storage appliance, but we want to make this open for the betterment of the whole community and get, you know, this deep storage sort of paradigm into it. Is that sort of the idea behind this?
Well, this is where their official announcements leave off because they go into roadmap territory and where analyst opinion and thought starts to kick in. But I think the big thing that these enterprise standards do for them by adopting REST and Amazon S3 as core parts of the standards, it opens them up to enterprise-level partnerships where they could partner with, let's say, a major enterprise software provider who's in the big data environment, who likes the idea of deep storage as part of the data workflow in their big data strategy, and partner with Spectra in terms of bringing a more complete big data analytics with deep storage strategy. Pull the Spectra solutions along in with them. I would love to see Spectra nail down some big enterprise partnerships as part of this, and those standard interfaces or protocols make it feel like something that a non-traditional HPC user would be able to adopt as part of their overall IT infrastructure.
Well, certainly you would think some enterprises would be interested in some of this technology. I mean, Spectre's talking about not just petabytes of storage at this point, but for their deep storage, even exabytes. This scales out to exabytes of storage that they could use for this type of thing. And that might be very attractive to certain types of applications out there where they don't need the data immediately, they don't need to be active, but they need to save it for other purposes. And certainly there are enterprises out there that are at least talking about saving exabytes of data.
Yeah, saving exabytes of data through no-delete policies. This would take everything. The other thing I didn't mention is it's all object-oriented. So other than the Amazon S3 concept of putting data into buckets, there's really no file or directory hierarchy. You're just going to describe things at the metadata layer if you need to get them back. So they're very compatible with enterprises with no delete policies or or just data that you might need to get back sometime. There's an excellent end-user presentation from Chris Whitmire of NASCAR talking about all of the footage they're keeping in the media and entertainment space and the occasional need to go find a piece of data that you didn't necessarily think you would have to go find again, but you want to be able to describe that through a standard protocol, have it go through your tiered storage interface to go retrieve the data with some latency, sure, but you're going to be able to store it, as Spectre is describing, less than 10 cents a gigabyte.
Right. The advantage of tape, obviously, it's basically an order of magnitude or so less than disk, so they get all the upfront and the power costs involved with this. So, yeah, this if they can make this work and attract the type of customers who need this sort of storage scale, it's a very interesting set of technologies and products.
Yeah, I think Spectra's existing clients, and by the way, Spectra's business has been continuing to grow. The CEO, Nathan Thompson, described Spectra now as having grown to 9 digits worth of revenue, although they don't say exactly how much. That's consistent with our models that we have for Spectra in this space. I think this strategy will continue to please their existing growing customer base while opening them up to the possibility of an enterprise partnership to go after some new areas.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a very interesting development there, and I think we'll be hearing a lot more from Spectra in the months ahead. SC's coming up. We'll see them there, certainly probably showing some of this and going on and developing this a little bit more.
We've had a lot of announcements coming up, Michael. It's harder every week for us to decide what we're talking about. We've got a few more stories already on tap for when we need them.
Yep. Yep, it's heating up. I think we're 5 weeks away from SC, and yeah, things usually heat up this time of year.
All right. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right, talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This episode of HPC Wire Soundbite is sponsored by Cray and Intel, the new Cray XC30 supercomputer, powered by Intel Xeon processors, delivers scalable performance for the most demanding computing challenges. For more information, visit www.cray.com/ownXC30.
You've been listening to HPC Wire Soundbite. Got a question or comment? Email soundbite@hpcwire.com. HPC Wire Soundbite is available every Friday afternoon from iTunes or at hpcwire.com. HPC Wire, the leading source for global news and information covering the ecosystem of high productivity computing.